is the time. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. And with me today, new guest to the show, author Everett DeMaurier. Did I crush it, Everett? Did I do well with the DeMaurier?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the only thing you could have done better with the name was add that little
Everett DeMaurier, my friend. How many baguettes have you had so far this morning?
I had some French toast and some French fries, and
way to Americanize
it. I'm looking
at
a chandelier, so I'm all French
now. that's all you need. That's all you need, my brother. Everett's got a ton of great books that I want to talk about. Let's do this. Let's spend a little bit of time getting to know you. I have a series of questions that I ask new guests just so we could get kind of a litmus test, a bar, if you would, of your personality type, your interests. Do you have a celebrity that is on your hall pass list? Are you familiar with the hall pass list?
No, but I've heard you mention that. Well, I am familiar, but I heard you mention that before. Okay. So I don't, but my wife does.
Oh, interesting. Who's on her hall pass list?
So if Daniel Craig ever makes it to the Kent County, Delaware area.
Oh, yeah.
I think there would be some marital counseling that we would have to go
through. Yeah, that would put a downer. Can you imagine? Yeah. I don't know why. What city are you there in Delaware?
Dover.
Okay. So it's metropolis. So I just was wondering, I don't know why, but I pictured more of a Connecticut-esque, like a family owned hardware store that you're just going there to get a replacement light bulb for your oven. And then Daniel Craig just walks by you in the aisle and you just immediately break into a flop sweat. Oh, like, how do I get this asshole out of town?
Out of there and hurry. We got to get out of here.
Yeah.
I hate this store. This is a horrible place. Yeah. I've got signs. Once you pass into Kent County, there are signs, Daniel Craig not wanted here.
Yes, no doubt.
You know, yeah, I've got detours. The old Roadrunner Bugs Bunny thing where they detour you off to the cliff.
I would watch a live action remake of Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote with Everett DeMaurier and Daniel Craig. That would be fun for everyone. What's the last movie you cried at, Everett?
Oh my God. You know, that's a trick question because I can cry at like a Hallmark commercial.
I'm so glad to hear this. Since I started asking this question, I'm finding so many other dudes who cry at movies. Maybe it's a dad thing. I don't know, but
I think it is. And you know what's funny is most women would be going, oh, look at him. He's crying. My wife thinks it's the most ridiculous thing ever. So whenever we were at a wedding this weekend, she's looking at me. You crying? You crying now? Are you crying? No, I'm not crying. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
She's an emotional bully when it comes to that stuff. But yeah, it doesn't take much. I mean, a really sappy commercial, and I'm looking the other way trying to hide it.
Oh, yeah. I get it. Every time I get the well very easy. You know what I mean? We're just the little burning in the eyes. But it happened last night. We were getting caught up on Survivor, and they had the family visits. And every time, a tear rolling down the face, and I don't even know these people. And that's the one. It's funny that maybe there's something about the law of attraction with those kinds of people. My wife doesn't really get hyper aggressive, but she does like to poke the bear a little bit and go, "You okay? You all right?"
Yeah,
like
that. Yeah. You're right, Dorothy. You need anything?
Okay.
Yeah. And you know what's funny that you mentioned that? There's one movie, and it's the movie that I'm probably the only person that cries at. It's Armageddon. You ever seen Armageddon?
Yeah.
So you know the scene at the end, they come back and everything, and the guy walks up and he goes, "Lieutenant Miller Craig, ma'am, permission to shake the hand of the daughter of the bravest man I ever met." I that's it. I'm a girl. I cannot make it through that scene without crying.
If you could have any job besides the job you have now, what job would that be?
I would love to be a bike messenger.
Really?
That would be so cool.
It would be, yeah.
I would love to be a bike messenger.
Now, is it just because you like biking around town, or is it because because I feel like, and maybe this is just because of the movies, there's a lot of danger associated with that job.
Yeah, but you know what the cool thing about the bike messenger is, and I don't even know if they still have bike messengers.
Oh, yeah, they do, especially in your area. Absolutely.
So I'm assuming, I mean, the bike messenger is, you're the sweaty guy in an airport, and you've got an elevator, you got all the power. You can do whatever you want. Well, you know, you got your bike and you got your package and you just don't care and you're getting it in there and getting it out. I think bike messenger would be really cool.
One of the things I like about the advent of the iPod and then the iPhone and earbuds was that you got to make your own music video in your own life. I don't care if you're driving right. in the car even, but like I've often done that where if I'm walking, I'm not making this up. I will put Staying Alive on just because I think it's funny in my head that I'm in my right. mind, I'm walking down the street to the most boring music video of the Bee Gees ever created, right. but it's funny to me. And there would be lots yep. of, but yours would be like high, like action packed. You know what I mean? You
oh, could, yeah, absolutely. Cause you're a bike messenger. Oh, that's yeah. an important thing. Absolutely.
That's good stuff. All right. Next question. What do you want most for your kids? Oh, first tell us how many kids you have, what are the ages, all that stuff. Give me the stats.
Yep, I have two boys. One is 23 and one will be 21 in a couple of months, which I mean, so I'm going to have two adult children, which is pretty scary.
No, that's awesome. It's so funny. I can't wait to get where you are, but I feel like people who are where you are always like to harken back to where I am. I've got 9 and 6. Those are my boys. I got one that's about to turn 7 in about a month now.
And you know what's funny is most guys that where I am lie to guys that where you are.
Really?
Because they say, oh, well, you're going to get so much. You're going to have so much confidence and you'll be, you know, you'll have it all figured out by the time you get there. No, we fake it the entire fatherhood career.
That's great. So what do you want most for those two boys that are grown adults?
You know, I wish I had a really cool, creative answer, but I want them to with the same thing we are. I want them to be confident. I want them to be happy. You know, something just popped in my head. One thing that my dad taught me, and it just popped in my head, so there's probably a reason for that, is my dad always said, when you have a choice of being right or being kind, choose kind.
Ooh.
So if there was something that I would want my kids, or there was one rule I'd want to pass from my dad to me to them, that it would be that rule.
Yeah, I it's funny. I like that. That's going to make it easier. Mantra for me is that I've realized that unintentionally, I've walked through my familial life kind of like the dick of the household. Like I'm constantly, you know, I'll point out, hey, this is a better way to do that. You know, that kind of stuff. And and so I now the running gag has been the last month. It's like, I don't do that anymore. I still say it. I go now when if I was still a dick, I would point this out, but I don't do that
exactly.
anymore.
That's not me.
So that's not who I am.
I would never point out that really happened in 1975 right, and that band split off to be the Bread.
That's
but
the
I don't
old
do
me.
That anymore.
Yeah. That's the old me. New me doesn't do that anymore.
Right. No.
do you feel like, is now that they are 23 and 21, right? You said
almost 21.
Almost 21. So do you feel like when you look at them now, do you get a sense of like, we accomplished that? Do you feel, and I'm not saying this as a judgment. I'm saying this as a guy who's on the other end of the tunnel on this, is that when they get to those early 20s, do you feel like, oh, I've done that? Their personalities have kind of flushed themselves out. And I know there's new challenges. You never, like my dad told me, you're never really done as a parent. I get all of that. But do you feel like that they're growing up to be what you hope they would be?
I think your dad's got it right and it never turns off. I think my oldest son got married about a couple of months ago. And what's so funny is you spend so much time, because we as kids, we see fathers, and fathers are intelligent and they smart and they know what escrow means and they know how to jumpstart cars and they know, you know, they know all that stuff, and someday we'll be like that. And then we realize, well, we're just pretending we're like that. We really don't know. And it's almost like you fake it till you make it, but you never make it.
Yeah.
So I don't think you ever, me personally, I don't think I've ever claim that, okay, I'm at my bachelor's level of fatherhood. I think I'm always studying for that final.
I think like the closest to a finish line I would imagine you get is at grandkids. And it's not because you're done parenting, because now there's an element where you still have anxiety about them parenting and wanting to help them out with the kids.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Because you know what it was like to go through that. But I think it hits a reset button where you get to play with kids and there's zero expectation.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. And I think part of it is the age thing, because by the time I know that now as a middle-aged man, I take things a lot less seriously than I used to. And life is a little more fun than it used to be, because we didn't realize how silly all the things that we really, you know, got so uptight about.
Yeah.
But I think having grandkids will be fun, because then you can just do the stuff without all that baggage. So, yeah, I think that'll be interesting.
I want to wrap this next question into one of your books that I'm very interested to talk to you about. It's Crib Notes for the First Year of Marriage, a survival guide for newlyweds. And my question is the last argument you had with your spouse. So let's use that to spin into talking about your book. First, tell me, what is the book about? I mean, is it just as simple as the title says?
Yeah, what's funny about it is it came out in the 90s, and I was trying to, you know, find a niche, because I was going to be the next Hemingway, and I had to get a book published in order to be the successful writer. And we had been married about a couple of years, and I started to think about all the changes that happened in that year. So I started researching, and there was plenty of books about marriage and plenty of books about weddings, but there really wasn't anything on that first year. And really, that first year, more happened in our relationship than did in the next five after that. I mean, that the first year of marriage is when all the action really happens, all the decisions are made.
I like Ray Romano's joke about that, where you have to think seriously about which side of the bed you sleep in, because that's the side you have for the rest of your life, and nobody tells you that.
Yeah, and there's a thousand decisions like that you don't even think about, that you are deciding, that besides all the boring stuff about joint bank accounts and all that stuff that you have to do. But there's a lot goes on. So from a marketing perspective, I had a really interesting niche that nobody had, and it worked out well, because again, from a business side, you had 2.8 million couples that get married every year. The great part is their marriage, their moves on, and then another 2.8 million get married.
Ah.
So it was a great time. It was the first book of its kind to look at that first year, and it did very well commercially as wedding gifts, as that sort of thing, because it's a rare place where the market is just erased and then you got a brand new market.
That's a good point. That's a solid business choice. And does it weigh in on such subjects as like thermostat settings and toilet seat settings? So which way the toilet paper rolls over, or is it more about budgetary things, or does it mix both?
You know, I'm a very deep thinker. Yeah. So absolutely, the toilet seat thing was on there, and I came up with a solution, by the way.
All right, I can't wait to hear it. Or is it giving it away?
No, the solution to that is to get the biggest, fuzziest shag carpeting toilet seat cover that you can find.
Yes.
You can't leave it open.
Yeah. It's a self-fixing problem. There's unintended consequences of that thing slips as soon as you let go of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, you know, so you have some mechanical issues that you need to deal with, but you can, you know, it solves it. But it's funny that you mentioned that, because it covered that stuff. It covered the big thing couples have is that first Christmas together.
Oh.
Because we had, you know, the Christmas that you had, and then the Christmas that she had, and now you have the Christmas that you have, and then her family wants you to do it this way, and his family wants you to do it that way. So there's a thousand little decisions that you have to make in that first year.
What would be your – because that is it. What we decided – I was actually – to be honest, I'm going to pat myself on the back. I was impressed with my ability, which very rarely do I impress myself. I was impressed with my ability.
The old you.
The old me was very impressed with myself, but the new me, much more modest about my self-impression. But anyway, is that I had this idea where we very quickly realized that there was a total difference between my parents' house and my in-laws. And it got to a point where it was getting too much for us to go. And this is before we had kids. So on the way one time driving to my in-laws, I had this idea that I pitched to my then maybe girlfriend. I don't think we were fiance. Maybe we were fiance at that time. I said, here's what we got to do. I said, we got to start alternating the holidays. I said, because eventually we're going to have kids. And what we don't want to do is have to split the holiday and travel with a baby, number one. And number two, if we start alternating, then it's just luck of the draw, whoever gets that first Christmas. You know what I mean? Like based on where it lies in the year, because we've already got an established pattern and we can't shake up the pattern. And we're a victim of the system. Nothing else. You know, we're not showing favoritism or anything like that. And so I think it all worked out. And then eventually we had a second kid and became total pansies and couldn't travel at all, is how it all broke down for us.
Now, the part you left out about that story is it was your girlfriend and it was your first date.
Yes,
and you were talking about when we have kids.
Yes, yeah.
And when we get married, yeah.
I'm a future planner, Everett. That's how I know. You know, it's funny. You don't know me, but you're not too far off. You're not too.
Hi, my name's Justin. Nice to meet you. By the way, if we have kids, I think we should alternate Christmas.
Honey, I already start using pet names. Honey, sweetie, dear. Honey, I've got a great plan. What we're gonna do is we're gonna start alternating family holidays.
This is perfect. Yeah.
And then if this were a Funny or Die video, she'd go, I'll have a white wine. Like, we haven't even ordered. Ah, that's great. But you're right, because in high school, I was the joke is that I was very much the guy who was not looking for a girlfriend. I was looking for a wife in high school.
Oh, yeah.
I was very seriously considering that. And the weirdness of it was, is that the actual reason I married my high school sweetheart, but it had more to do with the fact, I think, of just the timing of me growing up and kind of figuring out relationships than it necessarily had to do with us being perfect for each other. Now, in retrospect, I go, like, as we've grown older, I realize that, yeah, we're great for each other. We work very well together and all of that is fantastic. But I'm trying to think, in our first year, we lived together for 4 years before we got married. So we had worked out, like, the only one that we had to deal with was she was not very good at picking up clothes in the bathroom, which I thought was very weird because that's supposed to be my problem. Like, right. I'm the guy who was very aware of always putting the toilet seat back down, making sure that my socks weren't on the floor, all of that when we first moved in together. And then all it did was make me hyper-focused on the fact that I was always picking up her underwear and stuff. Like, and the other thing was we had a roommate when we first moved in together and we had a shared bathroom. So I was like, you're just fine with all this shit just hanging around right. in case Fred comes by. Like, that's not a big deal for you. That doesn't bother you one bit. And then there was a time where we were broke and we couldn't afford to stay in an apartment. We had to move back in with my parents. This is just after we got married. And so I had to explain to her, listen, when we go to my parents' house, that rock and roll bullshit ain't gonna fly. All right. So you gotta put everything away. It's like visiting Amish land over there. I mean it.
See, like, you, Dad. What the heck? Is this on my workbench?
Yes.
What are you putting all this stuff here for?
You're not too far off with the Southern influence either. You are very intuitive, Everett. Because I told her, this is so wildly sexist and chauvinistic, but I literally had the conversation with her and said, listen, after dinner at my parents' house, my dad will get up from the table and leave, and all of the dirty plates will be just sitting there, and my mom will clear the table. You will then have to go help my mom do the dishes. There will be a dishwasher in the kitchen that is never used for storage or anything. It just sits there to take up space because my mom likes to hand wash all the dishes. And if you say, can I help you? My mom will say no. But if you don't help her, I don't know this for without a shadow of a doubt, but there's a strong chance of like, well, she didn't even help with the dishes and she's living here for free, eating our food, all of that. I go, so let's just... Everybody be on hyper. You got to walk around on eggshells because they don't want us to be too comfortable.
And what was great for you was you mentioned that during the first date, too.
Also, yeah. Well, that was so second date. I'm not a crazy person. That was my second date. I'd already figured out we were going to be broke post-marriage. Right. I was showing her a PowerPoint deck of our future.
When we move back into my parents, this is how it's going to work.
See, I'm also a writer, Everett. I've got a narrative planned out. Honey, just follow the script. It's going to be fine.
Okay, in scene two, we move back, and this is what you'll do.
Hit me with any other things. I like the holiday one, because you're right. That's a very underrated decision or planning element in that first year of marriage. You got any more you want to hit us with before we move on?
Well, you know what's funny is you mentioned that you lived together, and I mean, I talked to couples that had lived together for – there was one couple that lived together for 10 years and got married, and they still went through that. There's some magic happens when you have that piece of paper. It really does.
Oh, yeah.
And even though you know what side of the bed and you know that the water thing goes over here and you know who gets up first and makes the coffee, there's still something happens when that relationship has moved on that there's still changes. But there's still a lot of the real fun part in writing that book was to realize how important language was to couples. And it was just words, you know, is it a glove compartment or is it a glove box? You know, is it a hero or is it a grinder? Is it a, you know, do you mow the lawn or do you cut the grass? And there were some couples that were just really, you know, that's not what we call it. They just, you know, it's not what we call it.
I don't know why, but I'm very entertained by that's not what like just to, I love marital fights, which is we got to go back to that after we'll take a break after this and I got to figure out what the last argument you have with your spouse is. But I just love because it's so mundane and yet so easy to understand for anybody who's been married any amount of time. For you to actually have had a fight with your spouse, the crux of it is that's not what we call it.
That's not what we call it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so good. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we're going to talk what was the last argument Everett had with his spouse. And then we're going to talk about his other book, which I think is of a similar nature, but different content, obviously. Crib Notes for the First Year of Fatherhood, A Survival Guide for New Fathers. You could go to EverettDeMaurier.com, and the link for that is in the description of this episode, but I'm going to keep mentioning it just in case you're already at work and you're like, hey, I want to check this guy out, pick up these books. I got a friend who's getting married. I got a friend who's having a kid. This would be a great gift. You're absolutely correct in all of those assumptions. There will be more of that coming back after these messages. Dealing with a red-eyed Everett DeMaurier. That song, I'm sure, brings Armageddon memories back all over. Are you okay, buddy?
Permission to shake the hand of a daughter or the bravest man I ever met.
That's a good impression, too. I got to go back and watch that movie. Huh?
Yeah, watch that movie as a dad.
Oh, that's good stuff. All right, so before we get into your other book, let's talk. What was the last argument you had with your spouse?
You know, it's funny because we really don't fight because I'm a somewhat intelligent man and I realize that that would just be silly. And I can't remember the subject. I do remember one fight we really had, and I remember it because it was the one that I won.
Oh!
Yeah, and it was bad. I couldn't even tell you what it was. I do know that I can now see out of this eye, which is good because was a little blurred for a while. But it was just – this goes back to that, you know – you know, when you have the choice to be right or be kind, that was one. It was something stupid, but it was very important that I was right. And, you know, you choose it. So that one. So I was right. And what did it? And it was just a stupid, stupid thing. And I haven't been right since.
And so I like that. It's very stereotypical husbandy for you to be like, yeah. I don't know what the content was. I don't remember a lot of details, but I just know I won. And that you have that emotional flag that sticks up that I won one. I've got one, and I'm going to hang on to that one for the rest of my days.
There's a little trophy that I have in the basement near the boiler that was that fight that I won. Yeah.
So here's the thing. I'm going to tell you the fight I had with my wife. It was a very quick fight. And it fits into what you're talking about totally, but I would like to hear your survival guide approach to this and see where I went wrong. My sons, it's the last week of school here in Southern California. And so the last week of school might as well not even exist. They do a lot of like, we're playing board games and reading books and dressing like this person and all that stuff. So, which I'm fine with. I don't really truly have a problem with it. That's old Justin. Old Justin had a problem with it. New Justin understands the importance of spirit wear on a Thursday. that asshole. Oh, it sucks to be me sometimes. But at the same time, it's kind of fun, to be honest. But anyway, so today was pajama day. And we got the flyer home from the school. And it's, you know, pajama read a book day. And so my kids walk to school because I live in a world of 1987 as a father, I guess. And so I sent them out the door and my older son comes running back in and it was great. It was like out of a movie. My wife was like, where is your brother? And he's like, he went to the school. And she goes, well, what's wrong? Why are you here? And he said, and he's out of breath because he's running. He goes, they're not wearing pajamas in my grade. It's like,
and add the laugh track and then cut to commercial.
And then I go, and so I go, well, okay, hurry up and change. And then she goes, well, why would they do it for? And she goes back to look at the flyer. Now, nothing my son does is quick. Nothing my older son does is fast. Everything is easily distractible and he's staring off into space about stuff or he wants to have a conversation about an owie he found, even though he's 9 years old. So I go, okay, go get changed. Cause I'm trying to read a contract at the time and I need to get it done before I come and do this podcast with you, blah, blah, blah. And, so he comes and she goes, well, it says here that you're fine. I said, just let him change. And she goes, yeah, but why would they do it? And I snapped. I just said, just let the boy change. Okay. Please. He's got to get to school. And then she gave me a look of like, oh, and her word said, okay. And her, like, you know, like I had won, but her eye said, oh, this will be brought up later.
Yeah.
So then she goes into the kitchen, which is right across from my dining room, and I'm still sitting there reading my contract. And then there's like a, maybe 20 seconds while he's changing his pants. He'd already had a regular shirt on. He just was wearing pajama bottoms. And then he said, she goes, well, you know, you're going to have to walk him to make sure he gets there in time. You know, in that tone of voice where it's like,
yeah,
I'm not so much angry. I'm disappointed. And so it was like having Siri or Alexa talk back to me.
Yes.
You know, you're
yes.
going to have to walk him to school.
You know, if you went to a better college, you'd have a bigger home.
That's true. If you lived here, you'd be home by now. And so I run my child to school, and then I walk back, and I come in, and she's still there in the kitchen, and then there's just a silence, and I could feel the tension. And, yep. and then I because I have been in this game damn near 20 years, I said, I'm sorry that I snapped. I needed to get this thing read, and I felt like he doesn't do things fast, and you were taking a stance of making sure that a third grader gets to wear pajamas to school. I just didn't see the importance in that, and I'm sorry if it is important or it should be more important. And then it was okay. She goes, no, I get it. Now, I'm sure that you are a much wiser marital man. You're an author in the subject. Am I truly out of the woods, or is there more to pay later?
I think you're good. I think you're good because you have, I'm going to get myself in trouble, but in my opinion, in my humble father author opinion, husbands say I'm sorry a lot more. And there's probably a reason. There's probably the reason that we should. It's probably the correct amount of numbers. It's the amount of times. But we do say it. My wife, I think, has said it 3 times. and she probably need to have said it twice. I say it all the time. So I think the I'm sorry, you know, cancels a lot of things. I think you're good.
I think also in marital spats, this is the one thing I've learned, and I don't necessarily think this is a male female thing. I think that this is non-gender bias, I think, but there's always one person who is like this. And my wife was like, you know, she's like, one time she even mentioned, because I win most of the arguments. And here's the thing. When you're a husband like me and you say I win most of the arguments, really you've lost, because to win is also to lose. Because correct. When you win, you've just got a frustrated, angry wife. Like, it's, you right. know, like there is no moral victory. So if you're the guy who thinks that you're browbeaten or pussy whipped, whatever you want to call yourself, guess what? It ain't, the grass is definitely not greener. It's patchy. There's lots of crabgrass and dandelions. There's those ugly Jerusalem cricket potato bug things in there. It's a lot of nastiness and post-apocalyptic world on this side of the fence, too. But she always says, well, how come you have to win all the fights? I go, it's not that I have to win all the fights. It's that I never argue when I know I'm wrong. I just immediately, I go, oh, yeah, right. My bad. That's like this morning. I felt like, yes, I was wrong. I should not have snapped at her, because I was just like, the reason I snapped and yelled was because I was trying to get multiple things done and it was going to muck everything up, and it still got mucked up. It didn't matter. So I had to apologize because I acted inappropriately. All right. Let's talk about first year of fatherhood. Again, the title of your book is Crib Notes for the First Year of Fatherhood, a survival guide for new fathers. Give me some pointers here, some things that maybe I missed, even though I'm well into this game.
Yeah, and it's the stuff you probably remember. I mean, there's all there's a lot of financial stuff that goes on the first year of marriage. There's a lot of financial stuff that goes on the first year of fatherhood.
Oh.
But then there's a lot of those changes, and there's a lot of those, you know, decisions that you have to make. I mean, you were talking about which side of the bed do you sleep on. There's a lot to be made in that first year, especially with that first kid. You know, who gets up, who doesn't get up? What, you know, when are we doing this? So there's a lot of that. A lot of that logistics that you still have to work with. Plus, you've got this little human, you know. I mean, as a father, it is the most. I remember coming home from the hospital when my first son was born and sitting in the dark. I don't think I've ever sat in the dark in my life. Sat in the dark and said, "Holy cow, I got to get house. I gotta change it." It just changes you. I mean, it really, really does. And once that changes, you're just down an entirely different path.
That is interesting. You think about the finances of the first year of fatherhood, but you don't. It's impossible to understand them. When you think about them, what you're really thinking about is the fear of the unknown,
right?
Right, and then you're in it. And one of the things that's one piece of advice my father got is that, because I was at the time telling jokes for a living, And I was like, I can't raise a family telling jokes. Like, this is horrible.
Right.
This is a horrible plan. Right. And my dad said, actually, they're not as expensive as you think in the beginning. They get expensive later, but in the beginning, it's not that bad. And he wasn't wrong. I mean, sure, diapers is an extra, you know, expense, but overall, it wasn't that bad. We got a lot of gifts from clothes. You know, thankfully, you know, we had grandparents who were doing a lot of that. And then we had friends who were giving us the hand-me-down baby clothes. That's super, super helpful. Is that the kind of stuff that you talk about in the book? Like, look for avenues to get hand-me-downs and gifts and stuff? Or
oh, yeah, absolutely. There are ways to cut corners. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of vanity involved in that first year, too. You know, you want to, you know, we can't have a used crib. You know, we can't do this sort of thing. There's a lot of ways to cut corners that you can. And it's a lot more popular now because you can call it vintage and you can hide behind a lot of that stuff. And
it's true. But
there's a lot. Yeah, it's the change of everything. Your routine has changed. Your life has changed. Your work life has changed. I mean, everything is about. You know what it is? I think I've just figured out what it is. When you, as a father, as soon as that child is born, you are no longer the most important person in the universe. I mean, it changes like that. When you're married, yes, here is my partner. But when you're a dad, you think, hey, if somebody my child is a minute old, and if somebody walked through that door and said, I got to shoot one of you, you'd smile and raise your hand and say, right here.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the thing that happens. And once that happens, nothing is the same.
It's interesting because, honestly, my stand-up comedy career took off after my wife was pregnant because it's – and I think it's that very same thing you talk about, like, I got to get a house. Like,
right.
It really forces you to grow up and is a strong motivator. It is a very – I'm currently in the midst of another career shift right now, and I'm not as worried about it as I was – when I was telling jokes and about to become a father, because I knew, oh, well, if I could figure out a way to feed my family telling jokes, I could figure out a way to do it in these other areas too. Like, I don't know why, but that's just how I'm wired. But I know that I will rely on my love for my family as a strong motivator to get crap done and get it done fast and effectively.
Yep.
You get that eye of the tiger because you have someone, and it always makes me interested. I hope I'm not getting too heavy here, but that it really does makes me interested. I wish I could get inside the brain of the person who doesn't make that connection.
You know, I was just talking to somebody the other day about that very thing, and I feel bad. And I know this, it does sound a little heavy-handed, and it sounds a little pompous. You know, look how deep thinkers we are. We're, you know, look how great we are. But I honestly feel bad for those dads that just don't get it. That don't get to have it.
Well, it's what I'm saying too is that I can't help but feel like they get it and they get the obligation, but they're in some way, shape, or form afraid of it. And so they turn a blind eye to it. That's the only way that I can wrap my brain around it. But at the same time, I think that's an oversimplification. And I think I'm displacing my own thoughts and feelings on them. That I think that there are people who can have kids and just not even think twice about how it affects them in their own life. Like they don't need to be a part of it. They don't listen to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? But they don't need to be a part of the kid's life. They don't see that as a big fulfilling thing, I guess, is the only way I can think to put it. And that interests me a lot.
Yeah. It's so, like I said, it's I was just talking to someone recently about that, and it's fascinating. It really is. And as cheesy as it sounds, I feel bad for them and what they miss. Because you get more out of it than you give by far.
Yeah. I mean, it's not without its hell. I don't know how it was for you, but I feel like I cannot be completely transparent here. Like that's why normally when we do a show, we have like a moment of the week. We do a palate cleansing because I feel like most of it is. And I think it's important. I think it's important that we draw attention to the not fun parts of parenting, because the more aware and the more comfortable we are with the fact that those frustrate us, the easier it becomes for us to get out of that funk that you can easily fall in. Like, I don't know what it was like when your second son came into the picture, but for us, it was rough. Did you, or was it a pretty easy transition for you guys?
You know, what's funny is it was reverse, because our first child was a spawn of Satan. I mean, he was. He turned out to be a great kid, wonderful kid, but he didn't smile for 3 years. I mean, he was just mad. He was just mad about life, and I am not making this up.
I believe
every day I would come home excited to see my child, and I would step onto the porch, and I'd open the door, and he'd walk over, and he'd go, da-da, go, and slam the door in my face. So he just put it, but he changed. I mean, he became a great kid. Now, what's funny is my second son was, you know, came out of the chute and was, hi, I'm your son. I'm going to sleep through the night. And you just wake me up when you want me to eat, and I'll do whatever you want. And I just, I'll be smiling right away. You just let me know how I can help. And he was the ultimate baby.
But it's interesting. I very rarely, and I'm trying to think of a single instance where people have come across both of them. We have some listeners on this show that we like to poke fun of. It's been a while since I've talked to this guy, actually, and they're the Sacamonts. They're Mrs. Drew. They notoriously had their kid, and everything was fine. There was no problems. I think he even joked about how there wasn't a dip in the sex life, and the baby was sleeping through the night. Everything is fantastic in the world of the Sacaments. And I think they're the only example I could come up with in my life. But there always seems to be some kind of a dichotomy. Either I've heard more examples of what you're describing, where the first kid was rough, the second kid was easier. I think the more prevailing situation is that the first one is super easy and tricks you into having that second one, and then the second one is a big challenge. I've heard a lot more of that coming out there. What is your tip and your survival guide for dealing with sleep? And is there any difference that you offer in like multiple kids?
You know what? With it, that's so tough. I think we discovered real early that an Everett without sleep is much easier and better to deal with than a Debbie without sleep. So it was just a trade-off. She's very good at many things, but we did this. And here I am, you know, 23 years later, and I wake up at 4:45 every day. And because that's when I woke up, you know, to feed my kids. So that was just something. I think it's just something that you have to. It's one of those many, many things. My wife does 90% of everything on our household, you know, household list. This woman knows, does the shopping list, and then writes the shopping list in order that the item is in the store.
Oh, this is a woman after my own heart.
So she takes what she breezes through. The stuff would take me months to do, but the sleep thing was one that I took and was happy to take.
I would imagine that if it's not already there, another addition, an amendment to the first year of marriage book would be that is to try to find out what are your strengths and weaknesses, because oftentimes you've unintentionally found somebody where your weaknesses are their strengths. And that's so I'm about to blow your wife's mind. I don't know if she's into technology, but there is an app called Grocery IQ, and I love this app. What it does is it lets you use your phone to add items. You can have favorites. You could scan the barcode on the item, and it'll add it to your list if you want. Mm. And then it lets you arrange the aisles in your store to accommodate for the aisles in your actual store. So it categorizes things by where they are within the aisles and the stores so that you can literally just start at the top of your list and walk through the store, and it will remember that every single time that you go back. Hmm. And then you can also sign up on this list on this app and use the same username and password. And then when you add something, like say you use the last of the milk, you can add milk to the list and it automatically populates it on her phone too.
Now, if I told my wife that, she would roll her eyes and smile and say, I already do that. I do that on a loose leaf notebook. It's the same thing.
I don't need your fancy technology, Justin.
She goes, it's a running gag in our house to go, we're out of ketchup. No, we're not out of ketchup. There's two in there. You can't. In my 26 years of marriage, I think there's been three times that we've actually run out of something.
Yes.
She's got back. Here's this, and here's in the pantry. When the pantry goes out, the mental barcode, boom, we need ketchup. Ketchup goes.
You don't
back
need
in.
To hear this from me, but you have won the wife lottery, in my opinion, because it took me damn near 15 years to get my wife on board with non-perishable items that you aren't consciously aware of. Just buy a second one and stick it in a cupboard somewhere, so that when you run out, like dish soap, ketchup, all of those things, you just put in a pantry. Then when you grab that one, that's when you add it to the list, because you got 3 or 4 weeks before you're going to need it again, man.
You know, we could probably buy another house and we wouldn't need food. We would just take the pantry and supply the other. But then we need pantries for both houses, but we still could probably do it.
That's funny. Hey, another thing then, if I can't sell her on the Grocery IQ app, I'm going to sell her on something that is, I think, an even cooler thing. And they're a fantastic sponsor of the show. And I'm talking about Sunbasket. You guys have heard me talk about these guys for months now, and we are loving the food. The kids are loving the food. If you're new to the show, what Sunbaskets is it's a food delivery service. So they will send you all of the ingredients of a pre-planned meal for you that you select. You could, they give you the options and you could build your own box. And it is made from entirely organic. They got pasture raised eggs, non-GMO tofu, all of the, it's all sustainably farmed. It's all right. And you can build it based on any kind of dietary plan you have. They got gluten free. They have vegan, vegetarian, paleo, lean and clean. They even have one that Mediterranean, which is one I love. Any of their Mediterranean dishes are so good. I had some lamb. They had a tahini sauce in it, too, and some lamb burgers that I had as a lettuce wrap. And oh, it was so good. So anyway, they even have kit options. When you're making the recipes, there's a small box on the right-hand side that will tell you things that your kids can do. And I know that you're like, listen, I don't need these kids in my way when I'm trying to cook. And that's fine, because all the meals take about 25 to 45 minutes to prepare from start to finish, because everything's kind of pre-measured out. All you got to do is chop it up, cook it, and boom. But what I have noticed in these is that when the kids get involved in cooking, it's so easy to get them to try it. And oftentimes it's a stupid psychological trick, but they love it. They'll actually eat it and they'll try new things and eat more of those new things. So, and the way I look at it, sure, is like, yeah, you don't want to do this for every meal, I'm sure. But what I like about this, as the guy who has been the meal planner and the grocery store guy and the cooker, and I'm about to go back to doing that full time, I like that I know three meals out of every week, they're going to eat a healthy meal, that it's going to be made entirely of a protein and some vegetables and maybe a little bit of fruit. And I can maybe expand their palate, and I'm not going to have to put a lot of effort or thought into it. I love it. So if you're interested, go to sunbasket.com/dadpodcast and you'll get $35 off your first order. All you have to do is go to sunbasket.com/dadpodcast, all one word, obviously. $35 off your first order. One more time, sunbasket.com/dadpodcast. It's great meals. You're going to love the food. You feel good after you eat it. I'm telling you. Check it out. sunbasket.com/dadpodcast. All right, back to you, Everett. Let's take another break, and then when we come back, let's talk more about your new book that is coming out later this year, The Invention of Everything, Insights on Life, Food, and One Good Thermos. And I'm sure it's there for a reason, but I can't wait to find out about the good thermos after these messages. Let me tell you that everything is everything. Everything is everything. Everything is everything. Everything. After winter, must come spring. Everything is everything. Yeah, 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 yeah. We're still here, obviously, because it's a podcast, not a radio show, Justin, with Everett DeMoyer. Oh, I love it when I'm an idiot. Everett DeMoyer, EverettDeMoyer.com. He's got great books for everybody listening to this show. Crib Notes for the First Year of Marriage, a survival guide for newlyweds, which we talked about in the first segment. Crib Notes for the First Year of Fatherhood, a survival guide for new fathers, which we just finished talking about. And now you got a new book that's coming out later this year in December. Pre-sales available in October. It is The Invention of Everything, Insights on Life, Food, and One Good Thermos. Tell me about it, sir.
Yeah, so how that started is going on the fatherhood theme. A few years ago, I was thinking, how was I doing my job? When my kids move out, when my kids become adults, and I get the dad report card, did I do my job from a technical standpoint? Do they know how to jumpstart a car? Can they change a tire? Do they know how to pack a suitcase? Do they know all that stuff? And I started thinking, no, there's a bunch of stuff I need to make sure that they know. So I started making a list of this and decided to create a website. And we created a website called 543skills.com, which was all that stuff. And what's so funny is we found out that the majority of people that were on that website were women. So we expanded it to 543magazine.com, and it included all the things that everyone should know. Everyone should know how to, how to change a tire, how to jumpstart a battery, how to do all that stuff. But then it's a lot of different insights on stuff the way that I learned things, because I didn't learn the way that, you know, you get on a phone. I learned through stories. I grew up in a little town with a bunch of different cousins and a bunch of different uncles. And when you said, you know, how do you chop wood? You had to listen to the 15-minute story about your great uncle that, you know, killed a grizzly bear with a twig type thing. So it's the site became this collection of stories, teaching stuff, but also looking at insight and looking at fatherhood and marriage and what it's like to look at things in a different way. And the book is the best of articles of that magazine.
I have a question for you, in your opinion, in creating all of this. And again, that's 543magazine.com. Do you think that, because I do notice that there's a lot of the younger generation doesn't understand a lot of these things. And oftentimes you could find the information on a YouTube video. And I'm curious, right. Do you think the YouTube video exists because people don't know it? Or do you think that people don't know it because the YouTube video exists? So I don't need to figure anything out. If I need to know it in the moment, I'll just look it up.
Yeah, I think both. I think what's, you know, it's there. I mean, how many times have you been? You've passed the guy with a flat tire with his phone. Well, you know, he's not calling anybody. He's Googling how to change a tire.
I used it just recently because I ran into an issue with the solenoid on my sprinkler system where my grass started turning brown. I was like, that's weird. I mean, it's been warm, but not too bad. And I was like, something's up. So I tried to turn my sprinklers on and they weren't coming on with my remote control. And I knew enough because I had heard stories and been a part of experiencing. My dad had a landscaping and contracting business when I was a kid, and I helped him out in the summers, obviously, or after school sometimes, and on the weekends, depending on the job. My job was always to broom the concrete. You have to broom concrete because if you make it too smooth, it's easy to slip on. So if it's a walkway, you just hit it with a broom when it's almost dry, and it gives it like a roughed up surface so it's not as slippery. And so anyway, I would do that. And I would many a night I had hanging out with my dad with these tree lights pointed in somebody's backyard, and we're with a push broom across concrete. And he's yelling at me to keep the line straight and all this stuff. You know, good fun stuff. And and so I looked up on the, I knew how it worked basically. And I was like, OK, well, I know I got to make sure that the signal path is getting here. But how would I, is it as simple as getting a voltmeter? And I was like, troubleshooting the solenoid on my Orbit sprinkler, right? I just type it into YouTube, and sure enough, there's a landscaper guy who's showing me how to do it, and he's got a voltmeter there, and it's 27 volts. So I was like, great. So I fired up, I disconnected everything, told the sprinkler timer to turn on this valve for 20 minutes, and then I went out there, and I was like, yep, I've got power coming to it, so that's great news. But then I was like, crap, I got to pull this whole solenoid out. And so I still did the old school move of calling my dad and say, like, hey, could you think of any other reason besides having to replace this solenoid thing for the sprinkler not to start? And he was like, no, I think that's it. And I was like, well, shit. He goes, well, it's not that bad. You just have to unscrew it. I was like, what now? He goes, yeah, the solenoid is just something that unthreads off and then you go replace it. He goes, oftentimes the whole solenoid to buy is cheaper than buying the solenoid by itself, the solenoid valve. So he said, just go buy another valve and then use it to replace it. I was like, great. Thank you. You saved my ass, Pops. But yeah, and I most of that though I picked up from going online to YouTube.
But you know what? The great part about what you just said, Justin, is the fact that the first part is you told the story of your dad. You told the story of sitting out there with the broom and making it, and that's a story. And we learn through stories. Then you told about going to get the information, the data.
Yep.
You know, so we learn by the stories. We learn by those things and by those, and that's what I was trying to. That's a perfect example of what you just said.
And can we touch on each one of them? I feel like this is I don't know why, I'm probably being unfair because you said that you found a lot of female following on your 543 skills, so you changed it to 543magazine.com.
Yep.
It seems like a guy's version of Eat, Pray, Love when I hear life, food, and one good thermos. So can you give me like one from life, one from food? And then I want to know what is the crux of the good thermos, unless it ruins the book in some way, shape or form.
No. So each one is articles, the best of articles that were on it. And they fit into a pattern. So it's, you know, there's a lot of fatherhood stuff in there. There's a lot of life in there. And so there's articles, you know, that about, you know, my father and, you know, my mother and there's a lot, you know, it's a fatherhood podcast. So here's a perfect one. you know, my dad was a great guy that I didn't realize how great he was until he was gone for 20 years. He was mugged as a kid and he became an epileptic. He hid that because at that time that was looked down upon, and he raised us as a janitor because he couldn't get another job because if he had seizures, he had to hide. And as a kid, as a teenager, you don't realize that until you're a father, that's the coolest thing you've ever heard. That's the most amazing, you know, fatherhood champion that you've ever heard.
Yeah.
And so by the time you're 55, you collect a bunch of those about the cool things. There was a guy up the street that helped me build my deck that came here to live with his sister because he was dying. Well, that's 6 years later. He's still around.
Wow.
You know, I mean, so there's a bunch of different stories that are just real life stories. And then you've got that stuff on this, what you just said about changing the solenoid on the sprinklers and stuff on, you know, changing tires and batteries and packing suitcases and hailing a cab. And the thermos thing is just there's certain things that are, you know, on the site, there's a lot of different things on things to never throw away. There's certain great things you never throw away because they're not making anymore. And those thermoses are great. We now have travel mugs and we now have insulated cups. But a thermos is a thermos. And, you know, you can get through life with just, you know, pretty one good thermos, metaphorically and really with just one good thermos.
That's a good point, because the thing that we miss from the thermos is the versatility. Right. Like, yeah, you could put soup in it. You could put chili in it. You could put something cold in there, too, with ice. You could probably even put, well, I don't know. I wonder if it'd be the same. I have a Contigo, which is that travel mug. And it's highly regaled as the top of the line travel mug of champions. And but the problem is that if you were ever to put a soda in it and then you hit that little button to release the pressure, all of a sudden it sprays everywhere. You know what I mean? But I would imagine the same thing would happen in a thermos. But my point is, I can't eat soup from my Contigo cup because it's going to get all clogged up and everything. But with a thermos, right, oftentimes it has its very own bowl built into the lid. It's, you know what I mean? It's a good travel situation and it's versatile.
And there's a classic thing with a thermos. You know, it's something that's missing. It's something that may be gone someday with a thermos. It says a lot. You see a man with a thermos, you can tell a lot about a man that carries a thermos.
That's a good point. That's a good point by you. All right. Anything else from the invention of everything? Insights on life, food, and one good thermos. Again, it's going to be out December 18th. Pre-order available on October, so mark your calendar. But anything else on that?
Yeah. The only other thing that jumped out at me was there was a one other piece that was really interesting, and it was the five things that our grandfathers would kick our tails for. So it was the five things that we just take for granted today that our grandfathers, or even great grandfathers, would have a fit. And there's a bunch of them, but the one that jumps out at me now is the fact that your grandfather sat on a porch. He had dinner. He sat on a porch. He visited with his neighbors. We don't have porches anymore. We have decks.
Yeah.
So we have moved from the porch to the deck. And there's in that article, it just talks about the things that we take for granted that are so normal that would be so foreign to your grandfather just because of the way that the customs have changed.
And your kids are probably just in that sweet spot where maybe they're catching the tail end. But kids today, they don't really run around in the neighborhoods and ride bikes and play with other neighborhood kids. Did they do that when your guys were young?
You know, they caught the cusp of it. They grew up back when you with the very end, when on a Saturday afternoon you'd find kids playing pickup baseball. But I think that's, especially where we are, that's pretty much gone now. It's all organized sports and it's all, I think that's gone.
And I've talked about this multiple times on the show where I feel like the unintended consequence of that is that the family unit, while growing stronger, it has accidentally weakened the community in that sense, where it becomes more about your family. And so I'm getting into real estate now. I activated my real estate license, and the funny thing. So if anybody's in Southern California, need a realtor, please reach out to me. But anyway, I was signing up for Trulia here because you have to, as a real estate agent, you need to be able to look on Trulia because that's what the consumer is doing, and you need to be ready to see what those values are, because it's funny because I don't know how the market is maybe over in Dover or the rest of the world, but here in Los Angeles, I'll tell this quick story and then I'll get back to my point, is that here in Los Angeles, they list the market is doing this. If you have a house for sale, it's a seller's market like it is everywhere because inventory is low. So you'll list a house and you list it low because you want to bring in all the offers, and then you'll pick the cream of the crop, three or four, whatever, that are matching, and then you start bidding them against each other. Mm. And without any effort or work, you will automatically find the threshold of that marketplace, and you will automatically find the exact value that people are willing to pay for that house. And then oftentimes, you're even going to be able to make 10 to 15% more if you do it that way. Whereas the old days, probably when you bought that house when your kid was young, if you're still living in it, Everett, is that you would list a house and the seller was like, well, I think this house is worth much more. And the realtor was probably like, not really, but we can list it at that. And then offers would come in less and you would kind of barter with them a little bit. That doesn't happen anymore. There really isn't a lot of opportunities to come back. If your offer is too low, they just move on to the next one because somebody's already bid out, and people are dealing with 20 offers on a single house as opposed to maybe two or three if they're lucky from back in the day. Now I lost what I was. Oh, and so one of the things I was filling out this Trulia thing to look at it, because people, when they look on Zillow or Redfin, they're seeing all these prices listed so low and they're like, well, I could afford a nice house. But what they're not seeing on those websites is what those houses sell for when they're out of escrow. They just see what they're listed at, and they're listed at probably $100,000 in some cases lower than what they're actually going to sell for. But point is that I was shocked in going through. Trulia does this thing where it uses where you are. You put in your zip code and it gives you a quick survey that they're using to generate data on neighborhoods. And one of the things was, is like, do you hang out? Do you often walk your dog and wave hi to your neighbors? And every single answer I jived with the yes. And it was like a 70%, 30% differential for everything I did, which was making my community a positive or neighborhood, a positive area to live in. Except, do you know the first name of your neighbors? And that one, predominantly 80% of people in my neighborhood said no.
Right.
And I was like, wow, maybe they're extending it beyond just like your immediate neighbors. But I just can't imagine living in a world where you don't know the guy's name living next door to you on either side and maybe across the street as well. Hell, even behind you. Like, I've had so many home improvement like conversations with my neighbor. Only it doesn't work because my fence is only 5 foot tall and he's 8 foot 10 or something. But anyway, I'm not peeking through the pickets is what I'm saying. I'm looking him dead in the eye. But I had conversations with the guy over the fence, and that, to me, is as silly as it sounds, but that's the joy of suburban living. That's the joy of the family lifestyle, is living that stereotype where you're shooting the breeze or he's borrowing your ladder or whatever, you know, that kind of stuff. And I don't know that that happens as much, right?
Yeah. And you just nailed, I mean, the whole, that piece of that whole article. I mean, and you know, the good old days weren't always good. I mean, there's trade-offs, definitely, but there was a lot of things that were so common. What's great about your story is the fact that it takes a questionnaire to say, do you wave to your neighbor?
Yeah, right. Well,
that's like that should never be. That should just be just common courtesy to say that you wave to your neighbors.
Well, when nobody knew the names, I was like, can I imagine living in a neighborhood where people don't wave and say hi to each other when they're walking their dog by? Like, that's funny. Yeah.
Well, think about it. Before garages were common, you parked your car, and when Bill was mowing the lawn, he shut the lawnmower off, and you're walking into your house, and you talk. Well, now you pull into the garage, you push the button, the garage door comes down, you walk in. You never see Bill.
Yeah, you don't have to. I don't want to deal with Bill and his bullshit.
Right. Yeah, Bill's a jerk. Who likes him?
That's funny. Oh, that's good stuff. Again, the website is EverettDeMaurier.com. The spelling and everything is in the description of this episode, but if you want it real quick, here it comes. EverettDeMaurier.com. Or again, it's in the description of this episode, so you can get the link. Go to 543magazine.com. Don't forget to pick up his book if you've got a friend who's getting married or they're about to have a baby. It's a great gift. Crib Notes for the First Year of Marriage and Crib Notes for the First Year of Fatherhood. Those are two separate books, each of them survival guides for newlyweds or new fathers. And then mark your calendar for The Invention of Everything, Insights on Life, Food, and One Good Thermos, coming out December 18th. Pre-order will be available in October. Everett, thanks so much for doing the show. Appreciate you, man.
Justin, thanks so much.
On behalf of Everett DeMaurier, this is Justin Worship saying hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.